Testing. Blah, 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 blah. Ready, set, go.
It's time for the Coach Amy and Coach Liz Show,
a podcast for endurance athletes by two athletes, two coaches, and a physical therapist.
We are your hosts, Coach Amy
and Coach Liz,
coming to you from
Kansas City.
Hello, friends.
Good morning.
We're back for another cast. So, what's up, Liz?
Oh my God.
Your face. Okay, I've got a quick, I have a question for you.
Okay.
What is your favorite action movie?
Oh, favorite action movie. I mean, like, does Napoleon Dynamite or Ace Ventura count?
Oh, those are not action movies.
I like spy movies and like okay. That kind of stuff, but action movies are just not my wheelhouse.
Yeah, Ace Ventura.
Well, he drives a movie. That used to be my all-time
favorite. He drives a car. Okay, so then my take on that is you like funny.
I like funny stuff, and I like suspenseful stuff, but the action stuff is like, it just feels dumb to me. I'm like, it's not like you're trying to figure out the mystery or the spy is happening.
Yeah, although, so then you like Red October then?
Oh, yeah. Like, okay. Stuff like that.
Right, because to me, that there's a lot of action in that. So yeah. To me, that's kind of an action movie.
Why, what's your favorite action movie?
Oh, God, I asked the question.
I know!
Like, I mean, there's so many.
I know.
But I would say, so this is just, it's not because of the weather thing, although it is, but, Twister, the movie Twister.
Oh, see, that's
an action film, too.
Okay, I guess I'm thinking of, like,
Are you thinking,
like Rambo or oh my gosh. And when I was traveling, I traveled through, both a lot of South America and then even in parts of Asia. And so you get on, and so you travel on buses and like, they look like Greyhound buses. And the common theme on all of these buses is that they would play American like action movies like that, like Rambo or things that had no plot line, but they would play them at volumes that were like insane. I mean, it was like max volume, but it was the over, like whatever language or whatever country I was in would be like the overwrite of the movie. Yeah. And so you'd be sitting in like this bus, and sometimes it was like 12 hours, and they would just play ongoing American action movies that were like so loud, and the cars are crashing and they're burning down buildings, and then they would have the language like overriding it at a volume that was just like maxed out. I'm like, maybe that's why I don't like, but it's, I mean, it was like, it wasn't just one country, that was like the common
that
thing.
That is hilarious.
It was so interesting.
Okay, so when we were in Cancun, I was like, I'm so tired, and I was laying in bed. I'm like, David, just turn the TV on for me. I just want something on there. And this is a funny thing in our family where, like, they're like, my kids will come into the house and they'll be like, Harry Potter's on again, you know? And I'll just be like, I've seen all the movies a gazillion times, read the books, love it. And now I just like having it on the background while I'm working. So, like, or doing something around the house, right? It just is, for some reason, it's like comforting. Like comfort food. It's like comfort movie in the background. Okay. So I'm like overtired from traveling and everything. I'm like, just turn on Harry, just turn on something on TV. And he goes, well, there's got to be Harry Potter on because Harry Potter's always on. So he does. He finds Harry Potter on. But it's in Spanish. And it's like dubbed over the faces and the
it doesn't match.
Oh, it's terrible.
It doesn't match,
but it's also like not the same, like I'm so used to those actors' voices.
Yeah.
And so it's not even just like that it's in English or not.
No.
It's like the voice is wrong and then the music wasn't the same music. And I realized that a lot of the enjoyment for me was like the music.
Yeah.
So it was hilarious. And I'm like, well, maybe I could just learn some Spanish from this.
Well, I also have noticed like on Netflix and stuff, there's a lot more movies that they're bringing in that are dubbed over. It's the opposite. So it'll be in like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff coming from like, Europe and like Sweden. It seems like
it's really good films too.
They're good films, but I feel like the dubbed over, like the English, they like it's all flat, so they don't have the intonation that kind of works right. with the dubbed over. And I'm having a hard time with this, and it's sad because I feel like there's some great. They look really good, and I'm like, I can't get over that. Like monotone, you're like, oh, they're killing the person. Oh, that's terrible. We should go. And I'm like,
right,
it doesn't work.
You know what? It would be better to watch it like you're hearing their language,
yes,
but then see it.
Subtitles. Yeah,
100%. That would be better. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Where are we going with this podcast?
That's the hell we just talked about.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. So on to today's topic. Today's topic is going to be the kick with the swim.
Yes.
Correct?
It is.
Okay. Why is this important? Why do we want to talk about it?
Okay. So we're going to talk about freestyle swimming. So it's also known as the front crawl. It's the most common stroke that you see. Like, that's what most triathletes are doing. Some of them will do side stroke or breaststroke or backstroke, but that's a very small number. And so we're talking about freestyle for triathlon swimming. And the kick with that is called the flutter kick. That's the name of the kick that goes
with it.
It's what we're all supposed to be doing. And, you know, we're going to... Yeah. And so nobody likes the kick. And
why?
Well, I'm going to get into that. But it's hard, right? It's hard. It's much more complicated than it looks like. And, you know, people get really hung up on the technique in swimming. I get 1,000 questions about that. But it's always technique about the arms. Like, people don't ever ask me about the technique about the kick. And they certainly don't ask me about how the kick coordinates with the hips. And I think that's just because there's not actually a lot of stuff out there about it. As I was looking for this, like... It's really under discussed, and we all want to pull. So pulling, for those who aren't swimmers, it's like a little floaty device you put between your legs, and it makes your legs float, and it takes away the need to kick. And
the little pull buoy thing.
The pull buoy,
yeah.
Which we all love, right? For reasons, because it takes the kick away. But if you don't have a functional kick, it's not going to make your stroke in freestyle, but it will break your stroke. And so what I mean by that is that if you don't have a functional kick, like the kick is not going to be the driver in triathlon freestyle, which we'll get to in a minute, but it's not where you're getting, it's not for triathletes especially, it's actually the kick is not hugely about propulsion. It's really a lot about stability. And so and how the rest of your stroke works. So if you don't have, it really is interesting. So if you don't have what I just call a functional kick, like a kick that's not impeding your stroke, you know, again, it's not gonna make your stroke, and that's not where you're gonna power your stroke, but it really messes up like what you're doing with your hips and your arms all the way up. And so I just wanna zoom out for a second and talk about a couple things in terms of how we look at why things go wrong in our swim stroke.
Okay.
And so when I'm teaching swimming, I'm teaching it from what I say the inside out. So I'll start with people looking at what they're doing with their body and how they're using their body to try to stay up in the water to prevent you from sinking. And the reason for that is because if you are not able to use your body to, they call it body balance if you've ever watched stuff about swimming. And so, you know, I also like body balance confuses people. So I'm like, really what you're thinking about with that is that... you know, you're trying not to sink by how you're holding your body in the water.
Basically, you can float.
It is basically how you can float, right? But with that, you know, nobody's legs float that well.
Right.
And so anyway, to go back to what I'm saying, to use your body position to stay up in the water, because that then frees your arms and your legs to do things that help move you forward versus trying to keep you up. So if you don't have the body balance, all that. So a lot of really funky stuff with the arms and the legs comes because people are doing things to try to keep themselves up in the water.
And that's what happened to me.
That's what everybody does.
Yeah. And you were like, I remember.
But remember that it's your body's job to protect you, right? And so you need to be able to breathe. And your body doesn't give a shit about freestyle technique. It cares about keeping you safe.
And so being alive. Right. And I remember that, you know, you and David were looking at my form in the beginning. And I could tell you had like, you both had like, oh, interesting, right? But it was like, oh, your legs. And I was basically doing like a scissor thing. Really, I felt like if I don't do this, my toes are going to drag on the ground. Basically, I was fighting the water all the time. And with both your tutelage and David's, I found...
Tutelage.
Oh, my God. Okay, where did that word come from?
Love that word.
But you guys both gave me really good tips and helped me with it. But it actually... I had to practice and practice, but I eventually found that balance in the water that you're talking about, and it was bizarre. I don't know how I found. I think it was just practice, and I finally found it. And when that, and I found it, it all clicked.
It makes a huge difference.
Like I know what you're saying there with that.
And if somebody is interested, Total Immersion is a program that does a lot of work around body balance. We can put that in the show notes. And I could do a whole podcast on that because it's really interesting. But I'm gonna just stay with the kick right now.
Can I ask you a question really quick? So for what worked for me was it was like almost where my gaze and my head was that gave me my body balance. And I don't know if that's part of it or not. And I know that's the separate podcast that you wanted to do.
Well, no, I mean, that's a huge part of me. So if you, so when we're talking about, I'll just recap it. So the way that I kind of introduce body balance is thinking about a teeter-totter and your lungs being the center of that teeter-totter. So when one side goes down, the other side comes up. And if you think about like your head position or think about your head, and part of that is, you know, you're leaning. I often will then talk about the running, and I say when somebody tells you to lean forward in the run, which is what you're doing when you're pressing that chest down in the pool, you're leaning forward like you're trying to swim downhill. If you think about that with running and somebody says lean forward, you're not bending at the hips and sticking your butt out, right?
Yes.
So it's a lean from, it's really like a lean from the ankles in the swimming too, just like in running, but also in running, like you're not going to run with your head up. That head position affects how your body lean. And so I will see, it's very common for that head position to be up a little bit for a lot of variety of reasons, especially when people turn to breathe. And as that head comes up, it really has a dramatic effect on the legs and the feet.
Forcing your
rest of
your body
to go down.
So
that part of that body balance does include the head. And you know, as I, in thinking about that, when people, when I'm talking about how you're laying in the water, you're thinking about, so you don't over tuck that head, is thinking about extending the spine rather than tucking the chin, because you can't over tuck as well. And that's something you have to just, you know, you have to play with that a little bit.
And that's what I feel like that's where I feel like I finally kind of, I found that balance spot for my body. Yeah. And then I was able to focus on the other things that you need to do for your stroke, like you said, to help propel yourself. So, okay, back to the kick.
Well, and there's, finding that body balance, I feel like you do that with some drills and then you slowly incorporate it into the swim. But Total Immersion, if you're looking to do some of that for yourself, is a good place to, they have got a lot of good drills and they explain a little bit more about that, which is helpful. But that's one of the big things. If you don't have that body balance, and you're not able to stay up in the water using your body, your legs do a huge amount to keep you up. And then that's really, like the legs become, that's where they become keeping you up. And so there's nothing about like forward propulsion or how it's working with your stroke, right?
Yeah.
So that's where, you know, the stem of the problems with the kick can often come from. And so in talking about the kick, we're going to talk about what we want to see with the kick, but just briefly what I, to kind of talk about what I often see that is happening in the kick that is not what we want to see, is you'll see a huge, it's like almost looks like somebody's riding a bike, or you referenced the split kick earlier in the podcast.
Yeah, so like a scissor.
Like the scissor. So you see a huge amount of bend in the knee and in the hip. And so they're bringing their knees up. It's almost like you're driving the kick from the knees. And that can look, there's a variety of ways that can look, but that's often like the theme. Like the knees, there's too much bend in the knees and the hip. And the kick with that, like how flexible your ankles are and how much you can point your toe really is quite a big factor in the kick. We'll talk about that later. But you can be doing, like you can be having too much bend in the knee and the hip, and sometimes you'll see the foot is flexed and sometimes you'll see the toe is that it's pointed, but either way that bend in the knee and the hip is just too much. And it doesn't really matter what your feet are doing at that point. Like it's, the kick isn't going to be working out.
Okay. So when you say bend at the hip, because I imagine you're going to say we get to extend the hip, but you're talking about flexion of the hip where you're bringing your knee towards your chest,
if you
correct?
If you imagine riding
what
a
we
bike.
Don't want.
We
yeah.
don't want. Like you're riding a bike where you've got that really big. So we're going to talk about why we don't want to do that. And so a lot of times, like, and you'll see people kind of like grabbing the water with their feet. And it's, so all of that motion or that scissor kick is just about trying to keep you up so that you can breathe.
Yeah.
So the first thing, when looking at that, like there's two things happening there that we are, that are not great. Okay. One is that you've got way too much bend in that knee and that hip. And the second is that it's all in that frontal plane. It's all happening in front of you. And so there's nothing about that kick that's happening there where you're loading the back, like you've forgotten the back half of the kick. Right. So the first thing when I'm working with somebody is that we're going to work to straighten those legs a little bit more. So there's actually there's much less bend in the hip and the legs than people typically think with the swim. A good visual with that is if you imagine like somebody going to kick a soccer ball and, you know, they load their kick in the back half, which we'll talk about in a second. And then as they come through, like there's some bend in that hip and then there's a bit of a whip motion through that knee bend, through that knee. And so that's about what you're looking for. And in order to get that, I will have somebody actually try to start swimming with their legs locked out. We walk through a drill where you've locked out your legs just because when you are trying to correct a bad habit, there's two things happening. You're unlearning one thing and you're learning something else. And so you're fighting against what your body naturally wants to do. And so I'll use a cue. And obviously when you actually swim, you're not locking your legs out. But if I give somebody that cue and they start thinking about that, it gets those legs into a position they can start working with. And I have a bunch of videos that I will put on our website in the show notes. So I made a video of this and then like what it's right. And then just everything we're talking about. I think there's like maybe three videos that I have that we put on there. Well, it's much easier to see it visually.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the first thing is that we need to get the legs a little bit straighter, right? Okay. And then the second thing that we're working on is loading the back half of that kick. So if you imagine like somebody going to kick a soccer ball or a tennis player or a baseball player, if they were to do any like follow through with their tennis racket, throw a ball, kick a ball, and they didn't, like all of them go back behind them. Yeah. As the loading phase.
Yes.
And that's where they're loading to get the power. And then as they come through, like they're releasing the ball or whatever in the front part of their body, but they have to load in the back half of their body. And so we have to do that with the kick. And it is almost universally forgotten in triathletes. Yes. So the way that we start correcting that is that we've locked out the legs. And then visually what I tell people is to imagine that they have a string attached to the middle of their hamstring.
Okay.
And that somebody's pulling that string up.
So some people don't know what the hamstring is. Okay. So the back of the thigh.
The back of the thigh. Okay. Back of the thigh. So you have a string attached to the back of the thigh and that somebody's pulling that leg up, right? And as you do that, what that's doing is that your glutes and your hamstrings are helping you move that leg up and it's loading. It's a loading phase. Again, watch the video if that doesn't make sense. And that is where you're going to get the power. And then when you kick down, you've loaded it. So it's not like you're just, I mean, imagine if you were a tennis player and you just like were trying to hit the ball in the front and you never went back to load, like or a baseball player would just be very awkward and you would have no power. Yeah. So you get no power from your kick if you're not doing the back half of the kick, which gets, it gets very forgotten.
Let's see.
So that's, I mean, I think those are the two main things that I see is that the knees are way too bent and that we're not loading the back half of that kick.
Okay.
So then you've gotten that kick in the right place and it's doing that right motion. Now, what I want to talk about briefly is why it matters. So just like in running, you will have people that, like a 100-yard dash does not use the same form as a marathon. Right? I mean, they're very different.
Yes.
And it's true in swimming. It's very true in swimming. And this is where I'll get the question about, oh, but there's the 2-beat kick, the 4-beat kick, the 6-beat kick. Like, how much should you be kicking when you're swimming? And so what we're thinking about for, like, if you watch sprinters in swimming, their kick is very powerful and very fast, and they are driving a huge amount from that kick.
It's ferocious, and you can see that if you watch the Olympics or watch on TV. You can see all the spray coming off there.
Versus if you watch a distance swimmer, and Katie Ledecky is a really famous.
She's
beautiful. And I've got, I have some links in the show notes, and she's a great example to watch because you can see what is called a 2-beat kick. And a 2-beat kick is, so what you're talking about with the number of beats is how many times you kick as your arms go around.
Oh, you're saying beat.
Beat.
I thought you were saying the letter B. And I was like, I was being ready to ask you.
Beat, sorry.
Beat. And that means like beat, like a drum, like a music beat.
It's how many times you're kicking per arm cycle.
Okay, and by arm cycle, you mean?
Two arms.
Two arms, mm-hmm. Two beats.
Yeah.
Oh,
and okay. So if you have a sprinter, then like each time, like, you know, your arms go, it's right, left is an arm cycle.
And
right,
a sprinter left, might go cycle. 4 beats.
A sprinter is probably going to go like 6+.
Oh.
So they've got it really ferocious where a distance swimmer is really going to only kick maybe twice per arm cycle.
Okay.
For triathlon, we are using a distance freestyle stroke. the reason for that is, one, because you're saving your legs for the bike and the run, but also if you've ever properly kicked, it's very hard, and the oxygen goes up, you produce a lot of lactic acid, and so you're going to start accumulating a lot of stuff very early in your race if you're trying to power it from your kick, in addition to not being able to breathe. So you really, like, a distance freestyle stroke is what we're going for, and that is why we talk about, like, a two-beat kick or a much slower kick in triathlon swimming. Triathlon swimming is powered from the upper body, but the kick really matters for that, because how your kick ties directly in with your hips,
okay,
which tie directly in with your arms and how you're producing power. So again, let's go back to like something like baseball or tennis. And if you have somebody, like, imagine if a baseball player or a tennis player just stood straight towards their opponent and had
no rotation. No twist.
They weren't using their legs. They were just using their arms to hit or to throw the ball, right? And
well, decreased power, but also injury.
Well, injury, the whole thing, but like the decreased power. I mean, there is a reason. And if you've ever played either of those sports, you know that they talk about turning to the side, you're getting down, you're using your legs, you're going to come up. And as you swing through, you use your hips to help power what you're doing with your arm. Right. And so that's your arm is really an extension of your hips in a lot of ways. Cause you know, you get so much power through your legs and your arms. But the thing with the baseball player and the tennis player is that they have the ground to stand on, mm-hmm. right? And so they are using that ground as the platform to then place their legs and their hips, and they push off the ground to create that hip to create that torque as they come up.
Yeah, they have a solid base of support. They have a solid plate.
But in the water, you don't. And so your legs are doing that. And so if your kick, which is really hard to understand, like, you know, that how that actually works. But if you watch somebody swim and you see their hips going side to side, that side to side motion of those hips is actually help loading what you're doing with your arms.
So, but when you say side to side, you don't mean waggling right and left. You mean rotating.
I'm rotating. So if I have a pull.
Thoracic spine rotation as well, yeah. Which we did a podcast on.
Yes. And so it means like, yes, like if you imagine that you have a pole lengthwise through your body, like starting at your head and coming out your feet, and you're going side, like you're rotating to the right round. And then around to the left, yeah. right? And yeah. so you watch those hips go back and forth, and it's not nearly as dramatic as it would be for tennis or for baseball or something, but that side-to-side motion is helping, it's helping transfer power.
Okay.
And the thing that is helping your hips, if you watch, and again, we've got this video of Katie Ledecky where it's great, and you can see how her legs coordinate with her hips. And so as her leg kicks down, it pushes her other hip over. And okay. what that's happening is that's creating, that's like the torque, and it's loading that power, which then coordinates with her arms. So even if you don't understand really how that works, what you can take away from that is that if your leg is not creating a stable platform and not able to create some force, which it's not creating force if your knees are really bent and it's all in the front, right? Mm-hmm. You need that straight leg, and you need to be loading. The way that leg loads, it creates, like, your hips are working against that, and then it's helping create power in the arms. So the function of the kick is not that we're necessarily just moving a swimmer forward for triathlon. It is very much about how you're creating power through your arms, and that's really why you need to have a kick that's functional. Because if you don't have that kick that's coordinating, if your kick form is shit,
mm-hmm.
it is not creating a platform.
It's not creating stability for the rest of the body to have.
So
to
your
generate
hips
power.
Don't. Yes, because as your leg goes down and it goes down with force, it's then it's helping your hip, like, flip to the other side, kind of, right? So it's like working against each other. And if there's nothing for your hip to work against, then it might be technically going in the right place, but it's not rolling to the other side with any force. And then that changes how, you know, your arms come through and stuff.
So you're losing energy there then if you don't. So your kick is less about, in this style for triathlon yeah. or distance, is less about propelling yourself forward.
Absolutely.
Which I feel like, not that I had tons of swimming lessons, but as a kid, it is like the kick, you're taught the kick, or at least back in the day, that kick was kind of,
Well, for swimmers, the kick is hugely important for propulsion.
Right.
I mean, even if you watch Katie Ledecky, like, you can see I mean, hers is just a beautiful example, and you really can, it's slow, she slows it down. I mean, the kick is about propulsion and swimming, okay, for sure. But for triathlon, I think people, like, we want to ignore the kick because it's like, it's hard and it takes our breath away and that kind of stuff. But the reason we need to have a functional kick in triathlon goes way beyond the propulsive nature of the kick.
Okay. Got it. I have a question.
Yeah.
So I've never practiced with the fins or anything. I never got to that stage where I wanted to or needed to. Okay. But I see a lot of triathletes going with their little bag of supplies. They got their snorkel and they got all their little toys. And one of them is the fins. And why would we want to do that?
Well, so that's actually...
Was that the next point?
It was, because... well, and first I'm going to back up and talk about being able to point your toes. Okay. And like that ankle flexibility, which is something, especially adults, like, you know, we start to get a little more stiff in the joints. And so pointing the toe is really something that not everybody can do. And especially being able to point that toe without cramping in the bottom of your feet. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, two things. Some people just don't have the flexibility in their ankles. And that is one thing. And it's a legitimate issue, because if you are kicking and your toes aren't pointed enough, it will actually make you go backwards. And that is...
Well, yeah, like a rudder.
Like, it's like a rudder.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if that is something for you, I feel like that's sort of skipped over, but that's really important. The other thing is, some people can point their toes, but they can't do it without cramping in their feet. And there's a couple things about that. One, you can do feet strengthening stuff to help that go away. Pushing off the wall really hard if you feel like you're about to cramp will exacerbate that. But the time that I see sometimes that cramping in the bottom of the feet surface is when we've got somebody that's new to triathlon and they're on the bike for the first time, or they're really increasing their bike distance by a lot for the first time, because those feet sometimes will grip the bottom of the cycle shoe, and so you're wearing them out, and so those muscles get really tired from like stabilizing in the bike. Sometimes it's a run, but I find that it's even more with the bike, because it's that constant.
People will do it with the run too, and we shouldn't be gripping with the toes.
Well, you shouldn't be, but I feel like the cycling, I feel like the gripping's a little bit different, because your foot is like, with running, it's like...
Yeah, you get to go through that push-off phase where it is stretching it out a little bit more, whereas on the bike, you don't. You're right.
It can be like more of a static hold almost. Yeah. And then, I mean, if you're doing that, like, you've never done it before, even an hour ride, like, you hold your foot in that static position for an hour, and then you go swim and you point your toes and you wonder why you're cramping. Yeah. Your feet just, you know, so there's ways around it. But I do find fins can be helpful for somebody for a number of reasons. One of them being, if you are somebody who's flexed that foot, or you're having a hard time getting that foot in a pointed position, the fins will force that foot into that position. One, it can exacerbate cramps, but it really is helpful sometimes to have something that actually puts that in that position with the pointing. People who flex that foot, so it's like a little frog kick kind of at the bottom. And sometimes it can happen for a lot of reasons. That is one of the more difficult habits that I have found to correct. For people, it's really a sticky one. And I feel like the fins you can't do that, like,
with the fins
froggy
on?
Thing with your foot with the fins on. So it's good to
interrupt. I don't know what the froggy thing is. I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, it's like when you kick, instead of the toes pointed, it's like the foot just, it flexes out. And so it's like the foot, so people flex and what they're trying to do is grab the water with their toe.
Oh.
Or like sometimes they turn to take a breath and their legs split, the foot will flex and come out. It doesn't really matter. If you do it, you know, fins can be a helpful thing to help correct it.
Okay.
The other thing with fins is that it's a tool. And sometimes if you're trying to work on technique, it really is most beneficial to do that when you're not super tired. And sometimes using fins will allow you to get into a position where you can practice good technique. And so they're a tool. Like, you don't want to use them as a crutch, but they actually can be a great tool. Not just for the kick. You know, sometimes if you're somebody who wants to work on other things like your, you know, body position or your pull, and your legs are really an issue, putting those fins on will allow you to do some focus work on things besides the kick, because your legs aren't totally jacking up everything you're trying to do. You know, then you need to go back and work on your kick, but they can be a good tool. And, you know, if you really get into, you know, I have some athletes that I've worked with and we're at the point with their swimming where, you know, maybe we want to increase their turnover. And so you can put the fins on and you can really increase how fast they're going. And that forces you since you're moving faster, your arms have to adjust their speed so you can start working on like cadence turnover or
yeah,
like
the neuromuscular training of yeah. that. Oh, okay. I have a, oh, can I interrupt?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does the wetsuit affect your kick? We have wetsuit use for, because it's just so freaking cold and there's, yeah. so there's like a, where a race would say it's legal, yeah. right? But then we also have training in the pool or in the lake with the wetsuit just because yeah. that helps you get your balance a little bit or helps
it
you float a little
up.
Bit.
It holds the legs
and
up.
Holds the legs up. And then would that be helpful to work on with the kick or does that mess with the kick?
I mean, it's glorious. We all love the wetsuits because, you know, it really, like, your legs can float and then yeah. this problem goes away. If you're looking for something that, as a tool to help with the kick, they have what are called sim shorts, or there's probably other brands now that are just, like, they're shorts. They look like bike shorts, but they are wetsuit material. And so they help keep you up a little bit, which is good, which can be really helpful if you're struggling a whole lot with a kick. It kind of just gives you a little buffer and still allows you to work with that technique. You know,
so
again,
is that
it's a tool.
More than, so let me ask you about those shorts because, yeah. I had an athlete who gifted me, she was like, I don't need this anymore. And, it's not a wetsuit though. It's like a swimsuit though, but it's got like shorts. It almost looks like you wear it over your tri-kit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, what am I talking about?
Oh, my gosh.
It's girdly. There's no floaty help. And I don't know if the sim shorts have more buoyancy to them than the...
No, yeah.
What is it that I'm talking about? Is it something that makes you more streamlined in the water or a little bit?
It does. So, wait, hang on. Oh, my gosh. I am... Swim skin. It's called a swim skin.
It's basically... But it's shorts. It's not full length. Okay.
So, the reason... The reason for that for triathletes is if you have a swim that where you're not going to use a wetsuit, but you want to wear your kit that goes over and it's very tight, and so it'll hold the kit in place. But there's also like swimmers will wear stuff like that because it's like it wicks the water faster. Honestly, for triathlon, like you know. Is there a huge benefit in terms of the water weight? Like it does, it kind of holds everything in. It makes you more aerodynamic. Most triathlon swimmers are probably not going fast enough or have good enough form
to
where
get,
that's
like,
going
to
come in.
Boost.
But it will definitely, like, you don't want to be swimming with a bunch of loose fabric. And so it is, like, beneficial to just, they're quite snug. And so you put them over your tri-kit.
Yeah. I've worn it before and I really like it.
It does. It holds everything in.
Yeah.
Like a big girl.
But this, so, and when you were talking about these sim shorts, I was like, oh, that's not the same thing.
No.
What are, describe these shorts. Like, is there some sort of like, they're more like
wetsuit
material, like rubbery.
Okay. Yeah. And you could wear those. I mean, some people will wear them in their race, but if it's like really hot or it's borderline or they're, you know, because it helps hold the legs up, but it can be, it's a good way to work on the kick. And it's different than, you know, if you're using the pull buoy, it looks like a big piece of foam that you put between your legs that holds your legs up. The thing with the pull buoy, is it's nice because it helps with the legs, but because you're not really using your legs at all, it doesn't teach your legs to coordinate with your hips.
Yeah.
And so it takes out, like, and sometimes that hip rotation gets underdeveloped when you're pulling a whole lot. Ask me how I know that.
Well, I'll tell you what it does to me is it hurts my back because I already have a lordosis.
Oh, yeah. People do. Well, especially if you're not using your core when you swim in the right way.
Right.
And so
But it makes you really have to, like, you can't have to override
it. You should be using your core that much when you swim.
But
if you're having low back pain with
if you already have a significant lordosis, it can be too much.
Lordosis is when you're
spine. Have a really big arch in your back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting off topic with the sim shorts, which are just like wetsuit shorts, can be helpful if you're working on your kick. Help keep your legs up a little bit and let you work on that form.
What else do you have for us on the kick?
You know,
you have a course that you are teaching coming up.
Oh yeah,
locally. Locally, you have people signing up to, and is it going to be especially on the kick?
It is. So it's a free. Okay. It's a free. It's April 20th, which is in about a month from right now. And it's at Longview Community Center. It's an hour and 15 minutes. It's $35. It's freestyle kick for triathletes. Yeah, it's just to focus on the kick and to talk about all of the stuff. I'm also doing another one that day on flip turns for triathletes, which are probably, I get yelled at for people like, triathletes don't need flip turns. Different podcast. But if you're interested, you're somebody,
have a podcast on that.
Yeah.
So if people want to sign up, we'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
For that.
It's on.
What's our recap? What is the take home message for us?
To consider the kick, just to consider the kick. People just want to ignore it.
Yeah.
Think about your kick. What are you doing?
The kick is important. You must have balance in the water first. I feel like that comes first before you can really be able, before you're really able to work on it.
Yeah. If your legs are sinking, which is what most of us happen, first, I would look at body balance, maybe look at some total immersion stuff. That's really helpful. Yeah. And then,
then you can work on the kick, and the kick is not fast and furious.
It's not.
Okay.
Yeah. We all hate the kick, but I feel like this is the kick revolution right now, baby.
Yeah.
Kick revolution. Get out there and kick some ass. Yeah. I have one more thing.
What?
So if a really good sort of drill for learning the kick is vertical kicking. So if you have a pool with a deep end and you are up and down in the water, straight up and down in the water, you will know if your kick is getting any forward propulsion or if you're doing it right by doing vertical kicking. I'll put a link in the show notes for that.
Would we wear like a life vest or a swim?
No, ma'am.
You just are straight up and down. Yeah, no, you want, assistive device.
No. You can start with holding onto the wall because I think that's where people start. But it's a really good way to get some feedback about whether or not your kick is doing something.
Whether
funky.
You're bicycling.
Yeah. It's a great drill.
Okay, so treading water. So
no,
that's
no,
a good
this
thing.
Is not
right,
water.
Exactly. So that's what I was just thinking is the tread water, when you were talking about like that bicycle kick that people might do when they're swimming, that's like treading water versus you don't want us to tread water. You want us to keep the legs straight.
That bicycle kick is
interesting.
Yeah. It's not treading water, but it could look similar.
It could
it's not. If treading water will keep you up. The bicycle thing
will not.
Fall. It's a disaster. Okay, we're done.
Okay, sorry. So we would like to hear what you guys have to say about the kick. Have you struggled with this?
No
what
cursing.
Yeah. No cursing allowed. We effing hate the kick. You can leave your comments at on our show notes at the Coach Amy and Coach Liz show.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thanks so much for listening. And remember,
we are in this together. Until next time.